Ooh, TJ's on there. Lynn Jensen. Holy shit, we got all kinds of people on here.
On what?
On this,
Would they, I mean, what? Make a remark or something?
No, no. Oh, let's see.
TJ,
Amy, your audio's on. You might want to mute yourself, hon.
Hi, thanks.
That's Lynn, right?
Yeah.
Hello, everybody. This is Greg. Am I hooked up?
I can hear you, Greg.
Thank you.
Hello, and welcome to the 2020 Gustava City Council Candidate Forum. As with so many things this year, COVID-19 has caused a few changes in our standard operating procedures. We're all kind of making our way through this, and we'll probably have a few technical issues, but we're going to do this as we always do. So welcome to you all. We have looks like a great turnout on the screens, and we're coming to you from a socially distant city hall on the Zoom platform. Again, thank you so much for joining us. So there are three of us here at City Hall, fully masked and socially distanced. I'm Artemis Bonadilla. My co-moderator is Meadowbrook. Karen Platt, our intrepid city clerk, is also here working as Zoom manager. She will be bringing you into the questioning. When the time comes, she'll be calling your name and keeping track of things like that. And the candidates are joining this Zoom forum from their homes on their computers or phones. And we're very happy to have everyone here. Due to the limitations of our computer systems and connections, please turn off your video if you can. The video connections take up a lot of juice and they overload the system quickly when too many people use them. If you can, please turn that off and just listen to us by audio through the evening. There are four candidates for three city council seats. Tanya Lewis is running unopposed for seat C, a three-year term. Mike Taylor is running unopposed for seat G, which is 1 year left of a three-year term. Jim Tenkate and John Buckite are both running for seat D, a three-year term. First, we want to say a big thank you to each of our neighbors who have volunteered to run for these city council positions. Anyone who's been on the council will tell you that it can be a difficult, time-consuming job, but hopefully an enjoyable one as well, and one that's really important to us all. We're going to start this evening's candidate forum with short introductions from each of the candidates, followed by a couple of questions from moderators, and then we'll open the forum to questions from the general public. I want to say to anyone who wants to ask a question, please be as concise as you can. We're going to try to get in just as many people as we can. So think about your question, write it down if you need to, so that you can say it clearly and the way you want to without having to think on the spot. That'll help us keep things moving. I'm also gonna go ahead and say that if through the evening someone asks a question that's already been asked, perhaps they came in late, we will be saying we've already answered that question and directing them and everyone to the fact that this forum will be archived onto the city's website. So you will be able to hear it again And you can also share with your friends that they can listen if they didn't catch our posters or they were had something else going on tonight. They can listen to this as well. So, and we'll probably revisit that if anyone does ask a duplicate question. So, introductions, candidates. You each have up to 3 minutes to introduce yourself to the voters. You will hear a reminder beep when you have 10 seconds to wrap up your introduction. Let's see, we're gonna start with Tanya Lewis, then Mike Taylor, followed by John Buckheit and Jim Tenkate. And Karen is going to call on you when your turn comes.
All right, Tanya, you're up.
We're not sure where Tanya is, but we're going to work this out or go on to the next person, let her join. But I want to say to everyone, you all may have different ways of knowing how to mute and unmute. But thanks to Karen, I've just discovered a really simple one where you hold down the space bar when you want to unmute your computer. And then when you're done, you release the space bar. So if you don't know otherwise, use that system. If you know something else, feel free. So let's see if we have...
Hello, Artemis, can you hear me now? Hello?
We can hear you, Tanya.
Sounds like Tanya's there.
Thank you. Okay. Sorry, I had to unmute my, because I'm listening to the audio through my phone, and I had to unmute that and unmute the Zoom. So, sorry about that. All right. So, my name's Tanya Lewis, and I've lived in Gustavus since 1994. I love this town. I know most of you out there. Some of you newcomers, I may not know, the last 3 years I've spent parts of the winter in Juneau because our daughter is going to high school there. We live on the east side of town, my husband Eric and daughter Ula, and I work for Glacier Bay National Park. I've been working there since about 1999. And I have been on the city council before. I took over a 1 year, the last year of a 3 year term. I think it was about in 2013 or 14. Learned a lot about city government during that year. And I was also before that on the advisory school board for the Gustavus School for a few years as the secretary. And also served on the board of directors for the Indian Islands Institute. So, I really like to be outside and garden and love this community and intend to stay here for the rest of my life, as far as I can tell at this point. And I'm excited to serve on the city council again.
All right, Tanya, thank you so much.
All right, next up we have Mike Taylor. Thank you, Tanya.
Thank you to the organizers first for setting up this forum. And I'd also like to especially thank Tanya, John, and Jim for being willing to step up to take a, offering to serve on the city council. We haven't always in the past been able to fill all of our seats, and we're lucky to have these three candidates willing to serve for a full 3-year term. And so as somebody who's been on the council, I want to particularly express my appreciation for you three. I first came to Gustavus with my wife, Karen, in 1977 while we were both in graduate school. Karen had bought our first lot here the summer before. And in 1978 and 79, we built our cabin. We were living the sort of early homestead style with a vegetable garden, wood cook stove, pitcher pump, kerosene lamps, and all while we were finishing our degrees. Since then, we've expanded to include some adjacent properties around our original property and have built our home here. From 1984 to 2002, we lived in Fairbanks with our two growing sons. Karen taught at the university, and I worked as an industrial hygienist, first for the U.S. Army at Fort Wainwright, then for the Fairbanks North Star Borough Department of Public Works, and finally for BP at Prudhoe Bay and internationally. Even while we were in Fairbanks, we spent our summer and winter vacations here in our Gustavus home. While in Fairbanks, I served as a Chena Hills Road Service Area Commissioner for about 10 years. We moved back to Gustavus permanently in 2002 and built our original cabin into a more modern house that we enjoy now. Since 2004, with the incorporation of the city of Gustavus, I've served in various volunteer capacities on advisory committees for road maintenance, the DRC, and for the borough evaluation. My experience as a road service area commissioner and as an engineering public works project manager in Fairbanks informed the design and implementation of our contracted road maintenance system here in Gustavus. I've been active with improving road quality in Gustavus pretty continuously since 2004. In about 2014, I volunteered to take an open 1-year seat on the council to be sure at that time that we had at least the minimum required votes to maintain road service. We were down to only 4 on the council at the time. I've served since then two full 3-year terms and 2 years during that period as mayor. Road maintenance has always been a major interest, and I've completed a number of road upgrades over the years. While mayor, I also managed the projects to replace collapsing and fish-restricting culverts with timber bridges, built the extension to City Hall, and completed phase 1 of the harbor cleanup. Recently, I've been working on to implement the improvements for the beach park, driven by the interest of the beach advocates in the community. Our city has matured greatly since 2004. Our internal systems have improved, and we're lucky to have the most experienced and skilled staff ever. Our financial condition would be the envy of any city in Alaska. The council also matured over time.
Mike, yes. This is Artemis. Could you just wrap up for us, please? Thank you.
Say again.
I'm sorry.
Say again, Artemis.
You might not have heard the 10-second warning, but I did give you one. And can you just wrap up for us, please?
Okay, I'm sorry. I'll just I decided to run again for the last year to provide some historical context and to help a new generation of council members and a new mayor build their skills in directing our city. And I will feel successful when they have been able to achieve their visions and they feel confident in providing city services with an eye for the future. And thanks for letting me go along there.
Thank you, Mike. Next up, we have John Buckeye.
Thanks, Karen. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes, John, go ahead. You're on.
Okay, fantastic. Great. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for doing this and participating. Nice to see the turnout there. And thanks to the city for hosting this here. Happy sunshine to everybody. We had a sunny one today. My name is John Buckeye, and in June 2012, my wife, Laura, and my two children, Hannah, who was then 5, and Ethan, who was then 1, we arrived here in Gustavus, and we've been year-round residents ever since, so just over 8 years now. We live at the far north end of Dolly Varden in the house built by Jim Wagner. And then Barb Mahoney owned it. And then Archie and Cindy Kendall owned it. And then we bought it from the Kendalls in January 2013. I usually work summers at Glacier Bay National Park, though this year I had some unexpected spare time to work on house projects because of COVID-19. Basically, I wasn't working because of COVID-19. When I'm not working for the park, I've had the honor of being my daughter's part-time homeschool teacher and also spending time with my family gardening, building, fishing, exploring. I've also served the last 3 years as a member of the Gustavus Advisory School Board. I'm something of a newbie or a neophyte when it comes to city government. In the past, I've attended city council meetings when issues of importance to me and my family have come up, but otherwise, I've generally kept a low profile. And when I was chatting with Karen about this forum, I joked with her that I've been living under a rock for the past couple years because I've never attended a city council candidates forum before. I'm running for city council essentially because I was asked. I had an interesting experience last month. I was coming back from one of our local rivers on a salmon fishing trip, and I was unloading my pack, packing up the car, and someone from town comes up to me. And they started asking some questions, and some of the questions I expected. You know, they asked, you know, how the salmon were biting. I expected that question. They asked what the bear activity was like. I expected that question. Then they asked if I've ever considered running for city council, which I did not expect. And I'll be honest, I've not considered running for city council until this fall, but I agreed to think about it. And when considering running, I thought about one of my former careers as a high school history teacher. And I would always remind my students that our whole system of government is dependent upon people participating. And considering some of the turmoil in our nation, I thought that serving this community is an honorable way to provide some small amount of stability and civility within the community. I don't have a particularly strongly held agenda, and if elected, I'll plan to listen, I'll ask questions, and plan to learn about the issues. I can contribute time, effort, moderation, and reason. I do feel that some issues call us to action. First and foremost is COVID-19 and the economic impacts resulting from the pandemic. One of the questions we need to consider is how we continue to keep our community healthy through the winter and prepare for a different season next summer. Another topic is...
John, time to wrap up.
Okay, that sounds good. Well, the other topic is basically going to be participation. How do we get more people in the community involved in discussions and decisions? I have a sense, and not completely well-founded maybe, but a sense that a lot of people in the community don't necessarily feel involved in the decision-making process. So how do we build consensus on actions? Thanks again.
Thank you, John. Next up, we have Jim Tenkate.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Jim Tenkate. The last name is Dutch. People always ask that. I'm married to Brenda. She works out at the park. We moved here in 2006 or 14. Been here 6 years. Loved it. Plan on staying here for a very long time. I am retired 20 years from the Navy. Brenda retired from Ball Aerospace in Colorado. That's where we moved here from. Spent 2 years in Juneau. And then we bought this little log cabin here out on Pleasant Avenue here in Gustavus. We love it. I'm running for seat D, hopefully to make a difference here in Gustavus. Thank you very much.
No. All right. Thanks, everyone. And I apologize for having to cut some folks off, but we're also hoping to get plenty of questions into you. So we're going to go to a couple of moderator questions to start the ball rolling, and then we'll be opening it up to the general public. So I'm taking the first one, and Karen will be calling on you to answer the questions in a random order. My question is there one major issue that enticed you to run for city council or that you hope to address?
And we're going to start this question off with Mike Taylor, followed by Tanya Lewis.
Well, I guess I gave a hint to that in my introduction. Really, the main thing I want to accomplish is to help other members on the council and the staff to be effective. And I bring a lot of years of experience in the city government here. Sometimes I've got the historical background or the memory for why something is the way it is. And I'm pretty used to the procedures and so forth. I am, of course, still interested in getting jobs, getting projects done on things like the roads and seeing the beach park continue to improve. And I'm interested in trails and things like that. But the main thing I want to do is to be a help to the other council members and the new mayor, whoever's chosen, to help them achieve their visions. And that will be success for me. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Tanya, you are next, followed by Jim Tenkate.
Okay, can you hear me now? Sorry.
Yes, we got you.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks. So I think, you know, what really has inspired me to run for city council is the COVID-19 pandemic. And I think I wrote more letters to the city council this summer than I probably ever have. And I think the council did great. The employees of the city did great. And there are things that I hope that the council can do more of to lead the community in this crisis, continue to lead. So I think the main thing, a couple of things. One is communication, and I would like to help, and this has just been an ongoing thing since the city became a city, is communication between the community and the council, and I've seen it come so far, and would like to continue to assist in making all the actions of the city completely transparent to the community, and offering opportunity for the community to have a part of that decision making. So increase community buy-in, input and buy-in. And I think that's especially important in this pandemic that we're in, because obviously people are very stressed, we're scared, we've been hit economically. And in addition to, more communication and leadership, I would like to inquire and investigate the possibilities of increasing testing or making testing. We have a great testing program here right now in the city, extending that through the winter and basically, ensuring that we can stay safe here through education and testing and support. And I'd say those are the main issues. Thanks.
Thank you, Tanya. Next up is Jim Tenkate. Sorry, Jim.
Yes, thank you. My biggest concern was when we were talking about the COVID, the pandemic, is the clinic. The clinic seems to be pretty much understaffed and under-equipped. I feel we need a strong push to get the new clinic started, make it a bigger clinic, better equipment, x-ray machine, ultrasound, And we need to do something to keep the nurse practitioner here in Gus Davis. We seem to go through a lot of them. And it would be nice to have one who would stay here. And we need to do stuff to encourage that, whatever that might be. I know housing is a real problem. And also, I think we got very, very fortunate with this pandemic that it didn't really cause a lot of health issues here in Gus Davis. And I'm not so sure we'll be so lucky next time. There will be a next time. If you're an environmentalist, you call it global warming, climate change. If you're a religious person like myself, you call it the end time prophecies. But there will be more pandemics. And, you know, the president candidate, Mr. Biden, he has already said that he would shut down the nation again, and that could mean no travel to Juneau, nobody coming from Juneau, and we would be here dependent on whatever we have to deal with whatever injuries might come around. If we're here without any help for 6 months, are we prepared to mend broken bones, have babies? God forbid, what if somebody dies? Are we prepared to take care of that situation?
10 seconds,
I think,
Jim.
We need to prepare for for worst case scenario when it comes to the clinic. Maybe a grant to keep people interested in helping out at the clinic. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Next up, we have John Buckeye.
Thanks, Karen. Continuing with the COVID-19 theme, that is really the elephant in the room. That's the most important topic. And continuing to keep this community safe and healthy. I have been impressed by the level of action that the community has taken through this. I have to admit, I wasn't involved in the conversations and that process, but we have come through pretty well to this point. However, fall and winter are times when these things can spread even more. So I am concerned about that. And echoing Tanya's point, continuing availability of testing within the town for people who are traveling, I think is a key item. Somehow being able to continue that point of entry testing at the airport for seaplanes, but also at the ferry, whether there's possibilities of providing en route testing setups on the ferry itself. The more we can provide that, the more we can contain things if it does start to arrive. Also, the issue of communication between the city council and the community, I think is really key. That it, even for someone who is relatively on the fringe of the community communication issues like myself, I still hear from some people that they don't understand what the city council is doing. They don't understand why the city council was doing something. So that's a key component as well for me in terms of issues.
Thank you, John. Were you finished?
Yes.
All righty, thank you.
Hi, this is Meadowbrook, your co-moderator. I just have a question for the candidates, and after that, we'll go to the audience for the audience questions. But I guess I have a question for the candidates, which has been somewhat touched on by some of them, but the question is, how could residents become more involved in the decision-making process? And Karen will give you the order.
Okay, this time we've got Tanya Lewis up first, followed by Jim Tenkate.
Okay, Karen, can you confirm that you can hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Great, thanks. I think I figured it out. That's a great question, Meadow. How can residents become more involved? I think having been a resident for, you know, a long time, and then having served 1 year on the council, I think there are a few ways where, a few avenues where the city could elicit more input from residents. I think people are busy. I know I am. People have their lives, their kids, their families, their work. And knowing what's going on in real time immediately. So say there's a meeting where public input is looked for, you know, getting that word out. And I know the city is doing a lot of this. I just think that there's probably some ways that we could make the information more accessible to people, and an easy way that people can contribute their input, multiple ways, you know, whether it's an email, meeting, that sort of thing. I just think that it's hard for people on the outside of the council to really keep track of what's going on or to know when the city is actually looking for input from the community versus doing more some of the mundane things like budget and that sort of thing, where city or community input would not be as important. So if we can figure out a way, and there has in the past, you know, like when we had a city newspaper or community newspaper, that was great because, you know, the mayor's report could be in that, or, you know, the city could put things out. We just don't have a great way right now besides email and posts at the post office to really do that. So I think it's a two-way street where the community and the city council and employees can work together to increase the communication back and forth. Thank you.
Thank you, Tanya. Next, we have Jim Tenkate, followed by John Buckeye.
Yes, thank you. I feel this councilmen and women need to make themselves more available to the community. I feel that if we go out and talk to them, they will tell us what they want and what they're looking for. For myself, I will be available at my shop, you know, 6 days a week. And if people want to come in and talk and find out what's going on, that would be great. But I feel, yes, like Tanya said, people are busy. They got things to do. And I think we need to reach out to them and find out what they're thinking and not necessarily have them come and find us. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Next is John Buckeye, followed by Mike Taylor.
Well, thanks for that question too. It's one of the, I guess, priorities for me is improving that communication and connection, and it helps people to, you know, feel like, you know, they have their voices heard. I'd also like to build a sense of consensus around some of the issues. When there is an issue that really needs community input, one idea could be specific alerts that can kind of go out to everyone. There's a lot of work that's done with the city council. There's the communication board at the post office. However, the day-to-day more mundane work, like, well, that's going on, that may not necessarily require everybody's input, washes over some of the issues that come up that maybe need more people involved and more input. So being able to hone in and provide an alert on a particular issue, if it's something that needs community input, is one way of doing it. I've also thought that you know, the digital options are good, but there are drawbacks to those as well. Providing digital connection through Zoom meetings. When we get beyond COVID and we're actually able to get together all in the same place again, we actually have an amazing resource now in the community center, a larger facility that could accommodate greater numbers of people for city council events or special meetings, things like that. I know the town hall is a wonderful venue, but it's kind of tight when we get bigger meetings. So we've got that community center option as well. One of the things I think other municipalities will do sometimes is live streaming city council meetings. And that's another digital option. The one drawback I see to those digital options is, you know, even though this is 2020, the year 2020, connectivity is still an issue. And I don't want to leave out people because they don't have the connectivity.
10 seconds, John.
So those are a couple different ways I'd say we can improve awareness and communication and consensus.
Thank you, John. Give us just a second. Artemis and Meadow are going to be right back with us to turn it over to the next set of questions.
Did you want to hear one from me? Just Mike?
Sorry, sounds like we missed Mike. Mike, we apologize to you for that. Go.
Okay. Hey, those were great thoughts from Tanya, Jim, and John. And I could sure work with any of those. Frankly, this has been a perennial discussion with councils ever since we started. And we used to have more committees back when we didn't have as much staff. And so people were involved in committees. But that picture is sort of tapered off and we don't use committees as much. But I think one thing we can do is to encourage more use of advisory committees and ad hoc citizens groups with interest in pursuing specific issues. And we have a great Marine Facilities Advisory Committee that's been very helpful, especially lately. We've had a beach committee and PFAS action groups. Those are both informal community groups, but they've been very helpful in informing the city. And I would like to see a lot more of that sort of thing. So if people are interested in trails or roads or improving the appearance of Gustavus, parks and recreation, art in the city, anything like that, I'd say get together with some like-minded folks and bring your ideas to the city, to council members. And the city can support groups like that, especially if it's a formal city committee with help on for Zoom meetings and the like. I think Zoom meetings are going to be a feature of city councils going in the future, and that's going to help. And then finally, I'd like to see the mayor writing monthly reports to the public, outlining the work that the city's been doing, what's been accomplished in the last month, what the issues are that are remaining, and how the public can participate. And those reports could be posted at the post office, on the city website, and distributed via the news. It is too bad, as I think Tanya said, that we don't have a newspaper to do that with, but let's make use of every channel we can. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, everybody. That was great. Okay, now we're going to open it up to the audience to ask the candidates question. The questions may be addressed to a specific candidate, or the question can be directed to all the candidates to answer. To be added to the list of people wanting to ask a question, there's a raised hand icon at the bottom of your screen. And when you click on that icon, you'll be put into a queue. And Karen will announce your name when it's your turn. And if you're using a computer, you can hold down the space bar on your computer to unmute your computer. And keep holding the space bar down until you are done talking. And say who the question is addressed to, or if it's one person in particular or the whole crew, then go right into your question. And please be as concise as possible. We want to get as many questions in as possible. And when you're done asking your question, mute your computer or your telephone, and Karen will take over. And so for the candidates, you have up to 2 minutes to answer each question. If the question is addressed to every candidate, Karen will call you by name, and then Artemis will give you a little 10-second warning. So Karen, who has the first question?
Susan Warner.
Hi all, Susan here. My question is about mask wearing, and it's to all candidates. And it is, are you committed in your daily life to wear a mask when indoors, in public settings, or in communal spaces outside of your home, and when outdoors in public spaces where you may be within 6 feet of other members of the community outside your immediate family until January 1st, 2021, in compliance with City of Gustavus Resolution CY20-22? Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Mike Taylor, you're up first for this question, followed by John Buckeye.
Thank you, Susan, for the question. And my answer is yes, of course. I was one of the authors of the city mandate to achieve that, or to encourage our community to apply that effective mitigation means. It's in line with the recommendations of the State Department of Health, our Health and Human Services folks. Every week I watch the municipal Zoom meeting with the Department of Health team that is managing the pandemic statewide. And every week they have pleaded with us as a, you know, as residents of the state to do our part to by using masks as a very effective means of blocking transmission. And in fact, masks we know are maybe more effective even than the vaccines. Vaccines will be only partially effective, most likely, and will vary in their effectiveness with different classes of the population. But mask wearing is an effective means of blocking transmission, and it's one of the best tools we can apply to protect our neighbors, ourselves, our families. I urge everybody to do it. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Next, we have John Buckeye, followed by Jim Tenkate.
Hi, Susan. Thanks for that question. And yes, my answer is a very loud yes. I really appreciated the city passing that resolution. When I was on the advisory school board, that resolution really helped us and gave us a little bit of leverage in ensuring that Gustavus School or the Chatham School District set the expectation that masks would be required at school. All of the scientific evidence shows that something that can be a barrier to particles coming out of your mouth and then ending up in somebody else's respiratory system is a way that we as individuals can take an action to minimize the spread of this. It reminds me a little bit of when I was in Juneau a while back. I chatted with somebody, and they made an allusion to the greatest generation, the World War II generation. And they said, they asked our grandparents to fight a war, and they asked us to wear masks. So it's something simple, it's something small that we can do to minimize the transmission.
Thank you, John. Next, we have Jim Tenkate, followed by Tanya.
I believe in the common sense approach to all this. If you're around other people, yes, by all means, wear a mask. If you're riding your bike down the road by yourself, I don't really see the need to wear a mask. Be courteous of people who are wearing a mask. If you come across somebody wearing a mask, put a mask on or keep your distance. That's my feelings on that.
Thank you, Jim. And Tanya Lewis.
Yes, I support the mask mandate. And I really think if we continue to social distance as we are and wear masks in public places or places where we can't stay farther than 6 feet apart, and we all test a couple times after we travel, like every time, I think we can probably keep COVID-19 out of the community, at least keep it from spreading within the community, which I think all of us recognize could be really bad, because we have a high proportion of folks that are vulnerable to the virus, where it could cause complications, and we don't have the medical facilities here. So I think masks are a really important part of keeping this town safe. Thanks.
Great, thank you, Tanya. I don't see any more hands up, but I do see Greg Strebler has the go faster icon on. I don't know, would you like to ask a question, Greg?
No, I was just messing around with my prompts or trying to figure how to do this, but I'll stand behind.
That's great, okay. Do you want to ask for more questions?
Well, we know that we have a big crowd out there, and this is your chance to ask a question. So please don't be shy. If you have any special concerns or you're especially interested in a certain area of the reach of the city, like Mike Taylor gave some good examples of the beach, the boat harbor, gosh, the DRC, one of my favorite places to go. Please just, this is your chance. We will probably, if people don't ask questions, we'll be closing down and you'll have missed a great opportunity. So please take advantage.
Hello, this is
Karen. This is Jim.
Hello?
Go ahead, Amy.
Excuse me, am I on?
Amy, go ahead. Who's your question for?
Okay, my question would be, my concern, I guess, is fiscal responsibility. I think that we've suffered the consequences of the economic semi-collapse here this year, and we don't know really when it's going to end and how we're going to recover. So I'd like to hear some thoughts from the candidates about how we're going to address, how we're going to pay for how our city continues from here. That's my question.
Thank you, Amy. Is there a question for each of the candidates, or would you like to ask a specific candidate that question?
It is for all of the candidates.
Okay. So this question, John Beckett, you'll go first, and Mike Taylor will follow you.
Thanks, Amy, for that question. That's the that is the double whammy question. You know, COVID-19 and economic challenges, particularly for a community that's so dependent upon visitation from outside. I actually honestly don't have a good answer for that one. I don't have a good handle on the conditions other than to know that visitation and tourism have been seriously impacted. The first step I'd see would be controlling the virus this winter, and then rebuilding economically next spring and summer. But it's so dependent upon the control of the virus this winter, both locally and regionally and nationally. And I would anticipate that we may need to seek some sort of federal or state assistance to tide us over through 2021. Because I don't necessarily, based on the forecast and the expectations of tourism and vaccine development that I've seen, that I don't, I'm not confident that we will be back anywhere near normal in 2021.
Thank you, John. Next we have Mike Taylor, and I just wanted to let Greg and Joe Clark know that I have you in the queue for asking a question after this round. So next we have Mike Taylor, followed by Jim Tenkate.
Thank you for that question, Amy. How the city council, the city staff manage our budget is one of the most important things that we do. We're talking about public money. And so it's how we handle public money is one of the most important considerations we always have. Our city has managed its financial affairs very conservatively from the start, ever since 2004. And we've built over the years a substantial surplus because year after year, we finished with a surplus of revenue over our expenses due to careful budgeting and careful use of our, you know, of our funds, monitoring the funds throughout the year, including our $1.4 million endowment fund. We have more than $4 million in savings now. We could, frankly, forward fund a year of government without any revenue whatsoever. We're in that, we've been in that good a situation. So that really has paid off this year, when we knew we'd have a much lower revenue. So the city council this last year was took the most conservative option that the treasurer presented us and accepted that as our way forward for our spending and adjusted spending, our spending plan accordingly. And so far in this fiscal year, we are on plan. We're meeting that requirement, and we're likely to make it through this year just fine. It's going to be another challenging year next year. As John pointed out, this pandemic's not likely to go away immediately, and we're going to have restricted income revenue for at least another year. And so the council is going to have to continue to be very careful in how it budgets and monitor its expenses every month to make sure we're staying on plan. I think we can do it, it's good to have the public keeping a hard eye on us to make sure we're doing that. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Next we have Jim Tenkate, followed by Tanya.
Yes, thank you. I think the best way to get through this difficult time right now is by neighbors helping neighbors. That's how you build a strong community for whenever anything bad happens. We have two great churches in this town who are eager to help out anybody in need. Costco will help out anybody in need. We just need to ask. That's all. Go to your neighbors, ask your neighbors. At some point, with all this government money, $2 trillion, that's going to have to be paid back sometime. You know, and the ones who are going to have to pay that back are the babies of today, the people like little baby Wesley, Amy, you know, Torin, Justice, all those little babies are going to be responsible for paying back the debt that we create today.
Thank you, Jim. And next we have Tanya Lewis.
Thanks, Amy. That's a good question. As far as the city budget, I am excited to kind of dive into that and learn more. I just learned a lot from Mike just now, so that's great to hear that the city has been pretty conservative and sort of planned for this rainy day. As far as the community, you know, that's a bigger issue that probably, you know, the whole world is dealing with right now. And so one of the things for this town that I've always wondered about is, you know, if there's any other diversification we can do in our economy, you know, besides like the park and tourism, you know, and there is some of that going on. And when I was on the council last, we got the endowment fund payouts going again, which was very exciting. And in my mind, I always wondered if that would be used, if anyone would take that up to use it to start a new business like value-added forest products or, you know, anything that we could make here, manufacture here from natural products and export. So I think those opportunities are there as far as getting through, you know, this next year. Yeah, I don't know how it's going to work out, but I think that we're all in it together, and this community, more than any other, probably will definitely help each other out and make sure that nobody goes hungry or homeless in the next year. Thanks.
Thank you, Tanya. And then our next person on the queue for asking a question is Greg Strebler. If you could direct your question to either all the council members or a specific or council member candidate or a specific candidate, do that and then ask your question.
thank you. This is Greg, and I'll ask anybody that would like to respond to it. This is kind of a tough question. Not too long ago, a very concerned citizen put together a long letter to the city council and attached a what you could call a petition to it, which they got a huge number of signatures on. And the fundamental gist of the petition, if you want to call it that, was the city should tone it down, be less involved in people's lives, be more conservative about planning for the future, and basically not take over too many personal prerogatives. And I didn't sign that. I didn't personally agree with it, but a lot of people did, including a lot of people I respect a lot. And my question is, how does the council build bridges of communication and respect to people like that, that disagree kind of fundamentally with, in some cases, even the city's existence, and certainly the city being activists? That's my question.
This is Tanya. That's a really good question, and one that I would hope to explore more. It seems like conversation is the start, right? And I don't know what resulted from that petition, if there was a conversation, but that could be the topic of a town hall, you know? is the city overstepping its reach? Is it impeding on people's privacy? I would love to see those monthly. What's the topic of the month? Let's have a town hall. Let's get input. But it has to start with two sides talking it out. And what I've seen is just a lot of rumors and misunderstandings and just not great communication, particularly between the council and, people that are upset with the city. And, it starts with an animosity, and then that prevents good communication. So breaking through that would be the goal. And I don't know exactly how to do it except sitting down and talking. Thanks.
Thank you, Tanya. Okay, we'll go with Mike Taylor next, followed by Jim Tenkate.
Thank you. Yes, this kind of question is fundamental here in Gustavus. We are a community known for its healthy skepticism towards government, the fact that we are a second-class city actually works very well in our ability to adjust the level of services that we provide to the needs of the community and the limits that the community puts on. We can take services, most services other than running the school, that the community wants, but we don't have to. So if the community doesn't want police services, for example, we're not required under the law to do that. So we're in a good position to adjust according to what the skepticism of the community and the needs of the community. The council did give a great deal of thought to that, to those petitions and the letters that came with them. And we actually did pass a resolution that committed that demonstrated our commitment to budgeting responsibly and keeping our expenses well in line with what the community can tax revenue can bear. And we managed to do that very well. We continue to run a surplus. So with regard to the expenses, we're doing well in keeping within those bounds. There will always be tension around whether to take on additional services. Some people may want to have dog control, other people don't. And a lot of times people want us not to take over anything new until there's something that really bothers them, and then they want us to do that. So the council always has to look at each one of these cases carefully, but keeping in mind that general skepticism that the community has that keeps our government small and I hope continually effective. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Next we have Jim Tenkate followed by Jen Buckeye.
All right, thank you. I think Tanya and Mike said it pretty good. I think communication is the biggest thing. In the past, I never really felt that city council was available to the public to sit down and talk. And I would, and that's one of the things I would like to do. Is I'm at the shop 7 to 3, Monday through Friday. I ask anybody who has concerns or questions to stop in and sit down and talk, and we can go over it. And then if I'm elected, I can take it to the city council and discuss it there and get you an answer back. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Next we have John Buckeye.
Hi, Greg. It's John. You hit the nail on the head of a kind of a fundamental issue. It's a fundamental issue nationally, but particularly within our community is how far do we proceed
without consensus? Or can we proceed without consensus? And I think the answer to that in our community, echoing everybody else's answer on that one, is the communication, but also taking a go slower approach. There may be a lot of different things we can do, but we should really ask what we should do and what people are willing to accept. If we take a little bit of a go slower approach with actions or services, and either build consensus, and if we can't build consensus, well, maybe we don't take those actions or services. I think those are steps to maintain a degree of community cohesion.
Thank you, John. Next in the queue, we have Joe Clark. Joe, you could either direct your question to a single candidate or all of the candidates. Go for it.
Thank you, Karen. My question is for all of the candidates. Looking forward for Gustavus, I think we'll all agree that this past summer was really different from our previous summers. There were a lot of things that didn't transpire, like our 4th of July celebrations and such. But looking forward, what kind of criteria would you feel comfortable with or have faith in to open up Gustavus? For instance, a vaccine? Would you have confidence in a vaccine or vaccines if the governor were to say it's time to open up? Would you feel comfortable with opening up and getting back to normal? Or would you want the mask mandates and the travel restrictions to remain in place?
Thank you, Joe. First, we have John Buckeye, followed by Mike Taylor.
Thanks, Joe. That's a good recognition that this situation will come to an end at some point. The criteria for getting back to normal, for lack of a better phrase, even though normal is not necessarily a destination we may be able to get back to, but getting things going again. My understanding is that if the state opens things back up again fully, that we really don't have a lot of options. We need to comply with the state's actions. It's my hope that the state will make those science-based choices. And when the time comes and the case level is low enough and the vaccinations numbers are high enough, we can move in that direction. But I think in many ways we'll be swept along with the state and have to follow those state expectations and mandates. I do believe that the vaccine will be the best hope, but we're going to be waiting for that for a little while, I think. So I think until that's available and until the state, based on the best science, says it's time, we're going to still need to be pretty careful.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John. Next, we have Mike Taylor.
Okay, boy, another key question, and thanks, Joe, for raising that. we've done really well this last year, I'd have to say. And I have to thank the community members who took the situation seriously, the businesses who have taken it seriously. The visitor businesses did an excellent job, I felt. And then, of course, we had an incident command system under the leadership of Chief Miller that took over the responsibilities for the monitoring incoming folks at the airport and doing the testing. The clinic has stepped up with testing. As one of the members of the EOC over in Juneau said, the ability of a community to mitigate the problems or the pandemic locally is the sum total of the mitigation measures that we all take individually. And so continuing to, for all of us to keep doing what we can, such as mask wearing in public and getting tested when we go in and out, maybe limiting our travel, you know, thinking about, do I really need to take that trip to Seattle or not, or Thailand or wherever, you know, we need to think about what we can each do individually. As a city, I think we can continue to work well with our businesses and with the following the state, making use of the state mitigation measures that they put forward and their recommendations, encouraging vaccinations, both for COVID and for flu. The public health department is strongly recommending that everybody get a flu shot, and that can make a difference in how we handle the pandemic and what the load is on medical facilities. But I think that we can, in fact, continue to do to expand our visitor businesses in this next season. We need to work well with those businesses to make sure they're developing plans that align well with the state's recommendations and that are giving thought to what the specific needs are in Gustavus. And I think that we can actually be effective in opening up more if we're careful and if we all make the best use we can of the mitigation measures available. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Next we have Jim Tenkate, followed by Tanya Lewis.
Thank you, Karen. I feel Gustavus did a really great job this summer. We had 5 cases of COVID here and we had no spread. I think wearing the mask around other people and in public places works. And I think as long as we keep doing that, we're ready to open up. There are other states opening up right now. Keep an eye on them, see how it goes. I think as long as people are cautious and careful, we're good to go.
Thank you, Jim. Next, we have Tanya Lewis.
Yeah, thanks. That is a really good question. And I think, you know, because a lot of, for Gustavus, because we're, you know, largely tourism based in the summer, a lot of opening up is completely dependent on what's going out on elsewhere in the world. So, you know, do people want to travel? Are they going to come here? And what are the rates? You know, what are the transmission rates or the positive test rates? And I know, seems like most cities, or at least Juneau and a lot of other cities in Alaska, have, you know, sort of a red, orange, yellow sort of system of degree of risk, and maybe that's something the city should consider for next summer. I mean, it's hard to think of that now because we really, like Jim said, we haven't had transmission, but it'd be good to start thinking about a plan for opening up and when we are going to. You know, what levels of transmission that we're going to limit people coming, or, you know, require testing and that sort of thing. And of course, yeah, working with the state on that is going to be paramount. So thanks.
Thank you for your answers.
Hi, this is Meadow, and I have a question for the candidates, and this is a very probing question, and I think it will deserve a lot of deep consideration. And so my question for all the candidates is, what is your favorite spot in Gustavus?
And this one will go to Jim Tenkate first, followed by John Buckeye.
My favorite spot in Gustavus would have to be on the beach, down by the pier, where you could just sit there and watch the waves roll in, and it was always a very peaceful and pleasant experience to be able to do that. Thank you.
Hi, Meadow. That is a tough one. That's a really tough question. There's so many great spots. The first one that pops into my mind is a spot up the Salmon River, way up the Salmon River. I think it's probably up in the Seri lands up there, where the spruce are fairly big. And the forest floor is covered with bunchberry that gets really red this time of year. And the river, not too big up there, but it's still bubbling along. A few beaver chewed sticks along the way. That might be one of my favorite spots.
Uh-oh, did we lose her? Did you guys hear me? There she is.
Did you say my name, Karen? I did not hear you.
Yes, I did. You're up, Tanya.
Okay, thanks. I think that's a really tough question. There's so many amazing places in Gustavus, but I would say probably the place I go most often and love maybe most dearly is the mouth of Rink Creek. That's a really nice walk from my house, and it's always very peaceful there, and lots of ducks and geese, and once in a while a wolf or bear, and I love it very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Tanya. And the last one for this question is Mike Taylor.
Hi, you guys have all mentioned wonderful places, and I thought of the beach, of course, and Karen and I walked the beach. I love the forest way up the, like John does, way up the Salmon River. We did a hike up there a couple of times recently into the old growth forest that is way up into the park. And there's some really interesting old growth forest up there that is fun to get to if you don't mind beating through a lot of brush and a long hike. I love the hydro road too, and doing the hike up that. Was just up there this afternoon with a couple of friends, and Jim Mack and I especially often have hiked it, and Dave Mills, and that's it's a great place for exercise and great place for a view. So those are all places I love. It's hard to say just which one I appreciate the most. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. I did have a question come through my email that I'll read. I just wanted to let everybody know that if you're new coming online, if you'd like to ask a question of any of the candidates, to raise your hand. It's on the bottom of your screen. And next, I'll read off the question that I have that came through my email. This is for John, Tanya, and Tim. And it says, have you been attending council meetings leading up to the city election? If not, why? And we'll start with John Buckeye, followed by Tanya Lewis, and then Jim Tenkate.
I have not. And I mentioned in my introduction that I'm a bit of a neophyte when it comes to city council. In the past, if there has been an issue that's come up that myself or my family has felt strongly about, I have attended. One of the ones that, you know, a little while back, the issue of Puna and the borough, that topic that came up, had opinions about that, and was interested in hearing what the city council had to say about that. But I have not participated in city council meetings or attended city council meetings in the past year. And I've monitored what the city council has been doing regarding the COVID response, and I've been fairly pleased to see the actions that have been taken. But I have not been there for city council meetings this year.
Thank you, John. Next is Tanya Lewis.
Yeah, I would say that since the city council moved to Zoom, I've probably attended more meetings than I had in a few years previous to that. I've been trying to catch them when I can. It's a little harder in the summer, but I was at the last one, and a couple others when we were talking about the initial CARES Act funding, and I've been hitting them when I can, but obviously not as much as I would on the council.
Great. Thank you, Tanya. And last for this question is Jim Tenkate. Sorry, I keep messing up your name.
Thank you. That's all right. Yes, I've been attending the last three Zoom meetings, trying to get caught up on what's been going on in Gustavus.
All right. Thank you, Jim. There are no hands raised in the participants list. So Artemis has another question to ask the council.
How about this? Am I with you, Karen? Good. First of all, I have to say a big thank you to Karen. We wouldn't be doing this without her, and we're not always doing it first rate, but we are doing it. That's what I love about COVID these days and life in a pandemic, is that we have to find a way to just do things anyway. So, one of the questions that I ran across that I thought was really interesting. So we talk about the budget, and people have opinions about the budget. Some people, you know, complain about the budget. Other people are pretty satisfied with it. So I would like to ask each of the candidates, how do you feel? Do you feel there is waste in our city budget? And if so, could you give a specific area that you would like to see funding reduced for?
Okay, we're going to start this question with Jim Tenkate, followed by John Buckeye.
Great, thank you. I really am not aware of a lot of wasteful spending here in Gustavus, so I'm really not qualified to answer that question, but I'm sure we can always do better. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Next, we have John Buckeye.
Yeah, I'm similar to Jim. I'm not that aware of anything that I would consider wasteful. I think I may, you know, turn that question into a question that goes back to Greg Strebler's question about how people perceive the actions that the council has taken, the city has taken, to provide services. And some people believe those services may not be necessary. And I think it's worth asking those questions, because people in our community ask those questions. Myself, I appreciate the services that the community, that the city does provide. The one that actually I believe could use more support is the DRC. We have a model waste disposal program here, and being able to reach that out to as many people as possible within our community keeps this place a little bit more healthy. So that's turning your question around a little bit, but question of, you know, do we have consensus on all the services we do provide? And if not, I can see where some people might see those things as wasteful spending. But there are some things that we do spend money on that I consider to be essential for, you know, the health and quality of our community.
Thank you, John. Next, we have Mike Taylor, and then lastly, Tanya Lewis for this question.
Thanks. Budgeting that the council does in the spring is always an effort of trade-offs. And while one of us might want to spend more, say, on roads, one of my favorite topics, you know, somebody else may think it's more important to spend it on the library. And so we work through those things and try to make sure that we're covering the needs of the community in every function that we've taken on. And, you know, what does it take to make that function work well? And in some cases, we're shifting money around. How much do we want to spend on the Visitors Association, for example? Those are trade-offs, and we all have to understand that we have to give and take in that effort on the council. And while I may want to spend more money in the area that I'm interested in, I've got to be willing to give up and make sure that the other interests are being covered. And that's how we come up with a budget that probably best fits the needs of the community. Keeping in mind, again, that it's public money, and we've got to make sure that the public is getting good value for their money. And so there are always a lot of trade-offs, and nothing's ever perfect. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Next, we have Tanya Lewis.
Yeah, at this point, I do not know the details of the budget, and so I cannot answer that question. From the outside, as a community member, I don't see a lot of what I would consider waste, but I think that's a good consideration and a good thing for all the council members to keep in mind, and I look forward to learning more about it.
Thank you, Tanya. I do have a hand up down here, Renee. You can address your question to a council candidate or all of them, and then ask your question.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. This is for all candidates. I would like to know what your views are on the current road conditions and the road maintenance, and your views on future road maintenance. Thank you.
Thanks, Renee. This question will go first to John Buckeye and then Jim Tenkate.
Thanks, Renee. We share a road, and it gets pretty bumpy sometimes. So I don't know the ins and outs of when things get graded and how things get maintained. It does seem that you know, things could get maintained or graded a little bit better than we currently do. But like I said, I don't know the ins and outs of that. I know we're limited by the materials that we have available here in Gustavus, in large part, unless we want to invest an astronomical amount of money in asphalt, which I don't think would A, be feasible, or B, desirable. But given the materials that we're working with, and the climate that we have, I know they've got certain constraints about getting things graded and being able to keep the roads in good shape. But I do think they could, we could use a little bit more maintenance on some of these roads.
Thank you, John. Next we have Jim Tenkate, followed by Mike Taylor.
Thank you. The roads seem to be pretty fairly well kept. It seems like when they get really rough and bad, they come through and they grade them. The road I live on, it gets graded, you know, maybe twice, three times a year. And that's fine. I know when the road gets rough that we need to slow down. People live where they live. The road has been there, you know, for a long time. And they should be aware of the road conditions when they move in. And it would be great to have paved roads, but like they said, it costs a lot of money. And I feel money could be spent better elsewhere, and the roads would be down the road, so to say, away.
Thank you, Jim. Next, we have Mike Taylor, followed by Tanya.
Boy, a subject close to my heart and interest. When we started the road maintenance operation in 2004, we decided to go with a contracted system. We actually modeled it after road service areas such as in Fairbanks. And we adopted the road maintenance standards and the contracting system that was used in the Fairbanks North Star Borough road service areas. But we had to modify that to adjust to what the reality is on the ground here in Gustavus. And when the city, when we formed a city, an awful lot of our roads had been constructed sort of as goat tracks. Very few of the subdivisions had been built with roads to any standards. And in fact, a lot of subdivisions didn't even have roads originally, and people just bulldozed a track through to their lot, and the road kind of developed from there on. So over the years, we've had an iterative process to add gravel and grade them better, reshape them, cut brush, improve drainage where we can. Sometimes when we've got enough budget, we'll do a special project to fix a problem in a given road, like building it up much higher or putting in new culverts or ditches where there weren't any. It's an iterative process. The roads aren't what any of us would think was ideal. But I would also note that we have probably the largest road system in Gustavus per capita of any community in the state. Petersburg maintains 7 miles of road. We maintain 23 miles or so of gravel roads. That's not counting the state maintenance. So it's an unusual challenge here because we're so spread out and we have so many roads that were never originally built correctly. But it's a budget issue in part, and the more money we're willing to spend on roads, the more we can do with them. But that could mean that we don't have as much money to spend on something else valuable like the harbor or the library or the DRC. So that's always a trade-off. Now, we're always interested in hearing from the public about how we can do it better, though. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Next, we have Tanya Lewis.
Yeah, thanks. I know roads are a big issue for most people in Gustavus, and maintenance is really important. And at this point, you know, I don't know much about how that maintenance is scheduled. I just learned a lot from Mike just now, which is a good little primer there. But I think that because it's so important to people, it's an important thing for the council to pay a lot of attention to, and as Mike said, get feedback from people if you have ideas of how it could be better. You know, I know in my experience, Dolly Varden, Wilson, and Good River Road get the worst pretty quick too. Maybe they just have the most traffic on them, you know. Maybe there's things that could be done to do better drainage on those roads. I don't know, but definitely something that the council should pay close attention to.
Thanks, Tanya. I had another question come through my email, and I think it's directed at all of you. This question is, hang on just a second. How do you feel about property taxes in Gustavus, and what are your thoughts on joining a borough with HUNA? And we'll start with, that keeps giving me the same random sort. Okay, we're gonna start this one with Tanya Lewis, followed by John Buckeye.
All right, well, that's a hard one. property taxes, I think, would be very difficult to instigate in Gustavus. There's just a lot of property. And, you know, personally, I'd rather see other tax revenues explored first, if that's needed, than property. And as far as the borough with HUNA, I would like to learn a lot more about that before forming opinion. You know, obviously, if it was cost us a lot of taxes, that would be very detrimental. If it, in a lot of ways, it makes sense if we do need to join a borough to join with our closest neighbor. And I like the idea of having more more collaboration with HUNA, but it's a little tricky because they have their own school system and or school district, and we're part of Chatham, and you know, I just need to know a lot more details, so I don't have a strong opinion on that yet. Thanks.
Especially in my email and my text.
Yeah, on the property tax issue, I think even bringing up property taxes is a little putting the cart before the horse because, you know, based on the current fiscal condition of the city, it seems like that sort of choice for revenue is not necessary. And I agree with Tanya that if we did need to increase revenue, there are a whole bunch of other options before us before we went down the road of property taxes. So You know, given the current situation, I would not support that. And then regarding fertilization with tuna, I think it's pretty important to maintain our independence. But I also think tuna is our closest neighbor. And it makes sense to collaborate and coordinate with tuna. But I don't think being part of a borough with tuna is the avenue to make that happen. I do feel like we may be the poor stepchild in an arrangement like that. And I think preserving our independence, but continuing to communicate and collaborate with our neighbor from a position of equals, as opposed to being absorbed within a borough with tuna, I think is the best way to go.
Thank you, John. Next we have Jim Tenkate, followed by Mike Taylor.
Thank you. I think John said it best. I would like to maintain our independence here and not be a borough. As far as property taxes go, definitely against property taxes. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Last, we have Mike Taylor for this question.
I guess I kind of look at things theoretically on in some ways. While property taxes have the advantage of being the most progressive, they hurt those with reduced means the least compared to, say, sales tax, which is not progressive and tends to hurt people with lower economic means much more than those who are better off. That said, the problems with collecting property tax here would be substantial, and the cost of collecting them, having an assessor and managing that whole collection system with a lot of landowners outside of Gustavus, I don't think that it'd be worth it. Furthermore, our existing revenue system is working quite well for us. Unless we ended up having to change our form of government to a first-class city or a borough and take over the school, we can probably do fine continuing with the sales tax system that we have right now and keep our sales tax actually where it is. I don't see an immediate need for increasing the rates either, as long as we have some growth in the community, in our businesses and so forth. We'll continue to have an expanding revenue source that will meet the needs of the community going forward. I do not favor forming or participating in a borough with tuna. Our second-class city is the best fit for Gustavus. It limits government in the way that we want to limit it. Again, if we don't have to take over the school, there's no benefit to us to being in a borough. And if we can stay out of it and keep our present form of government, we're the best off. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. I have another question that came through the email. And Hank, just give me 1 second. Okay, this one is for all the council member candidates, and the question is, where do you see Gustavus in 10 years? And we'll start with Mike Taylor, followed by Tanya Lewis.
Oh boy, well, we all, I guess, have our visions for our community, and I want our community to be the kind of community that we all are proud to live in. And I think in 10 years, we'll continue to be the kind of attractive community that we are now. One that maintains its outstanding natural environment and draws its strengths from that natural environment in the way of supporting our lifestyles and our economy while keeping it the kind of special place that, that draws young families, interesting folks that will contribute to the community. I think that we will continue and be even more an example of a community that does things very well. We are regarded actually among communities in Alaska as being more like the bigger communities, more like Haines and Skagway and so forth when state agencies are dealing with us. They expect us to be a cut above because we have been. And we've got the kind of professional staff and the kind of community that supports supports each other and supports its government. So I think we'll continue to be seen as a community that does things very well. And I hope that that's something that the council will always champion. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Next, we have Tanya Lewis, followed by Jim Tenkate.
Yeah, that's a good question. Where will we be in 10 years? I think Gustavus will be a fair bit bigger. I think it seems like we're growing pretty quick and we'll probably continue to grow. I think that'll be good for the economy, and I hope that we are able to maintain our friendly character and our awesome community. I hope that we can have clean water and be able to deal with the PFAS situation, as well as just make sure that, you know, lot sizes and designs facilitate clean water from wells. And I hope we have plenty of green space running through town for the critters to move through. And I think those will be some challenges as we continue to grow, is how to maintain those things, the things that we love, why we live here, even as we get bigger. Thanks.
Thank you, Tanya. Next we have Jim Tenkate, followed by John Buckeye.
Thank you. 10 years from now, I would like to see us be more of an extension of Glacier Bay National Park, more attached to them. They are a big draw here for our money. They bring in a lot of revenue. I would like to be a little bit more, see people a little bit more friendly towards the park. Maybe dress up Gustavus as more park looking. That's what I would like to see. I think we'll have a Class A medical center here. I don't see a lot of change come to Gustavus. I think a lot of the summer people might move up here as a year-round resident. But I think we'll be small, keep it the same, and safe community. And that's my vision. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. And the last person we have for this question is John Buckeye.
Well, I sure hope in 10 years, Gustavus is still the sort of place that you wave at everybody when you drive, regardless of whether you know them around or recognize them. That sense of friendliness, that sense of community, I think that'll still be here. I see Gustavus in 10 years as diversifying beyond tourism, because, you know, the facts are, in terms of the changes within Glacier Bay National Park and the changes within one of the main draws of Glacier Bay National Park, the glaciers themselves, those glaciers will continue to shrink. And one of the main reasons why people come to the place is those glaciers. So I'm seeing a necessity for us to diversify a little bit beyond tourism. We've seen some of the ways that tourism can be a fragile industry this past year. And we've got a lot of eggs in that basket. And I do think it important that we move towards an economy that isn't as dependent upon that. It's always going to be part of what Gustavus is, but perhaps 10 years from now, it won't be quite as big a part.
Thank you, John. And I think we have one last question from Meadow to wrap things up tonight.
Hi, are there any more hands up on Zoom, Karen? No, there's no more hands up in the queue, and it's getting pretty close to 9 o'clock. So unless someone raises their hand really quickly, did you get one? Oh, okay. Karen got a question. Hold on. But this will be the last question. It's all we have time for, but go ahead, Karen.
Okay, so this question is for all four. And the question is, when making a decision about projects, is it important what a council member is interested in, or is it important what the residents want? And this is for all four candidates. We'll start with Tanya Lewis, followed by Mike Taylor.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think as a council member, it's your responsibility to represent the people. But I don't think it's that simple because there's usually half the people for something and half the people against it. So there is a, you know, at some point, I think that there has to be, you know, gathering all the information and deciding what's best for the community. But the idea is not to, you know, be serving yourself on the council, but to be representing the community, however you can do that.
Thank you, Tanya. Next, we have Mike Taylor, followed by Jim Tenkate.
Almost wish I had a little more time to think about that one. Clearly, the council's job is to meet the needs of the community. And but sometimes it's hard to sort out what those needs are. What is it the community really wants? And the community does, you know, the more input that we get from the community, the better job we can do at deciding on projects and programs and things that the community is interested in. There are sometimes, though, when the council has to deal with situations that may not be all that apparent to the community, but the city, but our city necessity, like fixing the roof on the library. And so the council needs to sometimes make decisions on sorting through which projects are going to fund and what we're going to get done on what priority. Based on our understanding of how the city is operating and what the specific needs are. So, you know, while we all have our sort of pet interests, I suppose, we've got to be willing to sometimes set them aside when we realize the public doesn't support it. And I can think of a few that I've brought forward in the past that that fit that kind of category. If the public doesn't really want it, isn't ready for it, then maybe we should look for other things to do that are going to be more readily accepted and appreciated. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Next is Jim Tenkate, followed by John Buckeye.
Thank you. Yes, the people always come first. I'm not joining the council for my own benefit. I feel that the clinic is a need. That is something that I feel the people want. Talking to the people, looking at the 2017 survey that the people of Gustavus filled out, they indicated that they wanted a better clinic. And that's what I go by. I go a lot by what the 2017 survey said, that what the people wanted. And that's why I am going for a city council to answer to the people, not to myself.
Thank you, Jim. And the last candidate for this question is John Buckeye.
Hi. I do agree with Jim. And for me, it gets back to the idea that we can propose ideas, but unless we are able to build public consensus and support, we really can't move ahead with something. We may be able to do it financially or fiscally, but without consensus without support from a significant portion of the community, those ideas may best be left to rest. That sort of system promotes more cohesion. And I think even though we may have what we think is the best idea in the world, if folks don't want it, let it rest.
Thank you, everybody. This brings us to the end of the 2020 Gustavus City Council Candidate Forum. I want to extend a thank you to each of the candidates for attending and answering questions. And I want to thank Artemis for co-moderating this evening and Karen Platt, who is our Zoom Wrangler extraordinaire. And our deepest appreciation to all of our Gustavus neighbors who have attended and asked questions.
Please remember that Tuesday, October 6th, is our city election day. Our local polling place is at the community center, and the polls are open from 7:30 a.m. till 8 p.m. You can call Karen at the city for information about absentee voting at City Hall, or if you are unable to physically get to the polling place. Your vote truly counts in our community, so it's important that we all get out and vote. Thank you again for joining the 2020 Gustavus City Council Candidate Forum. Thank you for all the questions, and good night.